Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to do things a little bit different today. Obviously, following the law, some people want to get their two cents in. So we are going to open up the phone lines. That number, if you want to call, 619-924-9852, 619-924-9852, if you want to go ahead and give it a listen. We have Grant Essenmacher from iSportsWeb. He's going to be with me eventually to recap the situation. Right now we are having problems getting him connected. Hopefully that's not going to be the case with everybody else. But another rough game for Michigan State this Saturday as they fall victim to BYU 31-14. That is Michigan State's first three-game losing streak since 2009. A very rough start for heading into this year. Good news is they are still well in the race for the Big Ten, given the fact that BYU is not a conference foe. So they did suffer a loss. I think we got a caller in right now. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's up?
Oh, it's Rain. All right. To a different phone.
What's that?
Different phone. Different phone, huh? We had some issues with your line.
Is it good now?
Yeah, we got you now.
Okay.
Issues with your line, like Michigan State's offense has issues moving the ball. But I want to get talking about the defense first. Issues with the Michigan State defense, allowing a lot of points once again late in the game. I kind of want to get your thoughts on that.
The defense?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's clearly obvious the injuries are taking their toll. I don't think it's a lack of athleticism. As you've seen, D'Antonio, he hasn't complained once about effort or ability. I think it's just our youth is not ready. They're not ready for this yet, and they're being forced into a position that they really have no choice but to be in, and they're doing, I think, the best they can right now. I think it'll get better as the season goes, but I would expect the loss column to rise.
Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult situation with this defense. A lot of it has to do with Riley Bowen and John Reschke sitting out.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's the biggest thing ultimately when you look at this. Because the points given up are later in the game. They're given up where you don't have the depth at defensive tackle anymore. You don't have the depth at linebacker with Reschke and Bola both sitting out. And the defensive backs, there's no depth there at all. Kari Willis is the only other defensive back that's getting play. And that was
right.
Evident late in the game when Justin Lane had to come in and play wide receiver for the first time this season. As a true freshman, he's already played a second position on the field.
Well,
and
did
so
Justin Lane,
I think,
did he come in and play just cornerback, though?
Justin, he did just play corner, but he started as a wide receiver. He played a little bit
Correct.
During the IU game.
Okay.
So I think that's one of the big issues. All right. Do we got you now?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, we've got a few different phone lines going off, but we had some technical issues getting Grant on. So, Grant, talk about the defense a little bit and what you saw with that moving forward.
You know, like I said, especially going into the BYU game, we talked about with our preview post, you know, how stopping the run was key. And I think, you know, I heard you guys discussing a little bit about they played really well up until a certain point, and then, you know, things kind of unfolded a little bit. And, you know, I don't think it's from lack of talent. I just think we've talked about this before. It's a lack of experience thing. And when you have injuries with Bola and Reschke, you know, these guys, they come in and they usually start the game with lots of energy and excitement and They come in all amped up and ready to go. And if you look at the way our defense has played in the first couple quarters of the game, first portions of the game, it's been really, really good. But as the game wears on and as teams start to make adjustments, I think the young guys are starting to realize that it's becoming harder and harder to make adjustments to what other offenses are doing. And I think that's part of the issue, too, later in games giving up points. I mean, obviously, you saw in the second half what happened when Malik McDowell came back in the game. I think on the first drive, he had three or four plays where he was in the backfield on the first drive alone. And I don't know if that was just a pissed-off reaction or if that was Malik McDowell we're used to seeing, but you see the difference in having some more experienced guys in there.
Yeah. All right, so I want to get this caller's question in. What is it that you did want to talk about?
Well, I was listening to some of the post-game interviews. I follow a specific sports writer on Twitter, and he posted a 30-second bit interview with Damian Terry. And I thought it was very interesting just because of the questions he asked and the way they were answered, like such as he asked him, he said, how did it feel actually being able to finally be in the game and play? He said, I was excited and I was ready to go. And he just tell in the tone of his voice when he asked him then, he said, did you feel that the offense was better when you were in? He said, absolutely. I feel like we moved the ball, and I liked the pace that we had, and they let me throw it. And like you could almost tell in his voice that there's got to be some animosity with him sitting on the sidelines. Like he was happy he was in, and he didn't shy away from it. And so I wonder what that's going to do going forward as far as with that quarterback situation.
Yeah, that was why I asked you about the defense at first. But because we will get to the quarterback stuff a little later. But you said one key word there that I picked up on, and that was the pace of the game. That's the key word that I picked up when you talked about Damian Terry, because they did open things up a lot. Michigan State only threw the ball 11 times with Tyler O'Connor. He completed 7 of his attempts. And I know that Mark D'Antonio, when you talk to him in his post-game, when he was talking in his post-game presser, he mentioned the field positioning or whatever. But there was a time Michigan State got the ball deep in their own territory, and they ended up getting up to the 25, and it was still 3 straight runs with Gerald Holmes right up the middle. And so I think that's the biggest issue is Terry can have that animosity, but right now, even after this game, he's done nothing for me to prove that he deserves to play over O'Connor. Does he deserve to play? Probably. Over O'Connor is where I have the issue, because if you're going to open things up for Terry the way that they did, they threw the ball 10 times in the last half a quarter. They threw 11 times in the 3.5 quarters leading up to it. And that's my biggest problem. If you don't trust O'Connor to throw the ball, why is he out there to begin with? And let's let Grant offer his 2 cents on that.
Yeah, I think Tyler hit the nail on the head. It seems to me that Warner, he doesn't trust any of the quarterbacks to throw the ball. Even Terry, I mean, I think that when he's calling plays and he does get to the pass plays and we do complete them, I think he thinks, okay, we completed some passes, but, you know, I'm not sure that we can keep doing that. So I'm going to go back to the run because I know that we probably won't turn the ball over there. And in the past, we've had success doing that, so that's what I'm going to do. And a lot of fans on Facebook and other forums have been, you know, calling for Warner's head and saying that the one thing that I think a lot of fans are saying that I tend to agree with that is I think he was hidden by a lot of NFL talent at quarterback the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 seasons. And so I think it's easy for him to look back and say, well, I had success with all these guys, but you don't have a Connor Cook or Kirk Cousins behind center. So you have to come up with more creative plays, more creative options for them, you know, to run pass plays that work for guys that have a little bit less arm talent. And you can do that. There's plenty of teams around the country that do that. There's only so many Connor Cooks walking around. Not every team in the country has one. Michigan doesn't have one, but they still seem to run plays for Wilton Spate that work for him, with given the fact that he is probably a less talented quarterback than some of the other guys you see even in the Big Ten. And it's working. And so that's the difference, I think, is Warner is just not as creative as some of these other offensive coordinators, or he doesn't call the plays that he needs to be calling for O'Connor, for Terry, or Lewerke even whenever they decide to go that way. So I think that's one of the biggest keys I see right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to talk about the creativity, because there was the play that Terry had, and I think it might have been Higby was holding a block off of a screen. He was the one guy out there to block for Gerald Holmes. And Terry ran this play. Everything was directed to the right. It was a throwback to the left. And Holmes would have had nothing but green grass, but like O'Connor said, there's 11 guys on offense, 10 are doing their jobs. The one guy who isn't, it's a different guy every time. This time, it was case in point with whichever offensive lineman pulled the block for Holmes. Because if he hits that block, Holmes scores. Holmes scores, or he at least gets in the red zone. And so I think that when you look at the creativity of the offense, to kind of piggyback off of what Grant said, I think he's exactly right. He's got to open things up more for O'Connor. You can't sit there and run this snail's pace offense without throwing the ball, especially with this offensive line. You lost three pros, two All-Americans, two of them being All-Americans, rather. And so that's, again, Terry might have had a little bit of animosity or whatever for sitting on the bench, but I think O'Connor has even more of a case because Terry hasn't done anything to win that job yet, still, in my opinion. He fumbled the first snap under center, threw an interception that led to 7 BYU points, and kept the defense out there. I asked you, caller, about the fatigue of the defense, and, I mean, you agree with me. That was an issue, and so throwing them back out there because Terry threw a bad ball that NFL quarterbacks can't make, that doesn't help the case of the defense as well. So,
yeah,
hey, thanks for calling. Let's take a look at some of the personnel changes that were made throughout the game. A lot of changes to start off. Gerald Holmes at running back, Tyler Higbee, left guard, Cody Keeler, left tackle, obviously. What one really stood out to you in regards that, hey, this is something Michigan State can use moving forward, and what changes do you feel still need to be made?
I think that the biggest one that stood out to me, at least, and I think you will see Michigan State use this moving forward, and I think based on their performances this year, it probably was warranted. I'll preface this by saying I was the biggest L.J. Scott believer going into the year. I still think L.J. Scott is the most talented running back that Michigan State has on the roster. But right now, it seems to me that Gerald Holmes is running with more of a purpose. His vision is better. I see L.J. Scott miss hole after hole after hole, and I think that's just, you know, sloppy. As a running back, your first job really is to hit the right hole and hit the hole that's open. I mean, you can't – L.J. Scott, so many – and you saw it on the third and earlier in the first half, on the third and one where Michigan State did kind of hurry up and go to the line. They gave – turn around, third and one, give the ball to L.J. Scott. Shocking, right, with Dave Warner calling the plays. And he goes and then runs right into his own offensive lineman, and we don't get the first down, and we have to punt. And so it's one of those things where I just think Holmes is reading the defense better, his vision's better. I don't think he's more talented. I think L.J. Scott has all the talent in the world. I just think right now Holmes is playing better, and Holmes gives you a better chance to win while he's at running back. And so I think that's the biggest one that stood out to me, so in that game at least.
And someone brought up a good point during the tailgating about this, believe it or not. Someone said Holmes was shifting a little bit too much when he was younger, and that's why he found himself on the back end of the depth chart. And now he's starting to run straight ahead. And he runs low, he runs with a purpose, and I've told people that we've had a running back that moves his legs like Gerald Holmes since Lorenzo White. I'm not saying he's as good as Lorenzo White, but we've not had a running back fight through the contact like Holmes. And that's the problem, is LJ, last year he was a little more shifty. This time he is more of a straightforward guy, and it's something you saw with Javon Ringer. He used to dance around and everything else, but by his senior season, he was following the 3 yards in a cloud of dust mentality. Now, the difference between Holmes and Ringer and L.J. Scott is Scott is a high runner.
Mm-hmm.
He's too He's too tall when he runs. He's not getting low. He's not using his legs. When he gets hit, instead of churning because he has the leverage to find ways to spin and contort his body to fall forward. And you saw it in the Iowa game. I mean, it worked. The Iowa game, the Big Ten championship, that last reach, it worked. It worked that whole last drive, actually. But if you put Gerald Holmes in there, I think you find just as much success on that last drive. Just because of the style of running.
Yeah, and I think that I completely agree 100% with the high runner analysis. I think that's 100% accurate. And I think, honestly, the problem's getting worse. I think that last year, as a freshman, I think LJ was a little bit hungrier to see the field. When he did get in the game, I thought he definitely ran lower last year overall than this year so far. Mm-hmm. And like I said, by the end of the year, once he started to get comfortable, like you said, in the Iowa game, he's starting to get a little bit lazier in terms of his center of gravity, how low he wants to go to break these tackles. And let's be honest, he's not a burner. He's a break tackle kind of guy. And so, you have to run low if that's the kind of running back you want to be. And I still think he's the running back of the future. I think, like I said, he has all the talent in the world. He just has to fundamentally clean some things up or else he's going to get surpassed by other guys on the depth chart like Gerald Holmes is doing right now.
And Madre London actually did it a little bit too. LJ Scott, 3 carries against BYU. Not exactly numbers you would anticipate at any point during the course of the season. Everybody knew Michigan State was going to try to look for one guy. Right now, that guy is Gerald Holmes. Like you said, it could be LJ Scott. But even if LJ Scott did lose the starting job to Holmes, we figured he would still be a 10 to 15 carry a game kind of guy. And right now, that's just not the case. He's simply not getting it done. You throw in the fact that he's probably the worst blocker out of that group, and changes need to be made because the offensive line isn't going to protect Tyler O'Connor, Damian Terry, Brian Lewerke, Culler Coons, whoever is in there at quarterback. And so changes do need to be made. And I think that the Gerald Holmes move was probably, the best move that we saw this weekend. When you think about some of the worst moves, Justin Lane moved over to cornerback. Darian Hicks did not play, as he was listed on the depth chart. He did not play. Tyson Smith actually got the start. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on the cornerback situation now, because I know that you and me were both not 100% sold on Vyonte Copeland. He did nothing in BYU to help his case, in my opinion.
No, I think the problem right now with the cornerback position is there's really when you see Justin Lane going over and playing corner and getting playing time there, I think it's a little bit of Coach D'Antonio, Coach Barnett looking for solutions because they're just not getting production they need out of that spot. Copeland didn't play very well against BYU. Darian Hicks didn't play at all. And I think fans saw a little bit of what's going to happen if we do turn to some of these young guys, because I thought Tyson Smith didn't play well at all either. And so I think both corners really struggled against BYU. I don't really see anywhere where we have a lockdown guy at the moment. I think Copeland still should and could be that guy, but he's not playing like it right now. It's similar to LJ Scott. He's the corner with the most ability on our roster. He's just not producing. And really you're seeing that across the board as a whole, but in terms of, all the fans want to attack Darian Hicks all the time after the games and things like that. But, I mean, without him in the game, both of our corners, we didn't have a good game at that position. And so I think, he does have his faults. He struggles to turn his head on deep passes, but he's a good tackler. He covers short to intermediate routes well. He just struggles on deep balls, and I think fans remember those things and don't remember the things he does well. And I think, really, I don't know the reason behind holding Darian Hicks out. I'm hoping it was an injury. But I think Michigan State did struggle without him in the game.
Well, he did get hurt last week against Indiana. And so I'm thinking that that's it. I don't think that they would hold him out because he's been their best corner so far this season. And you said it. it was kind of like this preconceived notion for Vyonte Copeland, only he's not living up to the expectations. And a great analogy that I was messing around with a friend or whatever, talking to him yesterday about it, is what if Sir Mix-a-Lot would have died after Baby got back, like right after it? All right, now, but, okay, there is a tie-in or whatever. It's like Vyonte Copeland's Western Michigan game. He hasn't done anything since then, but that's the initial impression of him. Right now, he is a one-hit wonder. What he did against Corey Davis, who one of the best receivers in the country, how well he played against Western Michigan, he still gave up a couple plays here and there. He had the interception to seal the deal. The future was bright for the kid. Unfortunately, an injury sidelines him for a season, and things go south. But that first game is what everyone's holding on. Darian Hicks played well as a sophomore at first. He suffers an injury. He goes out, and he has a rough rest of the season. Everybody remembers that rest of the season, and that seems to be their impression of Darian Hicks. It doesn't help when you're 5'9" on the football field either. But initial impressions are clouding fan base, are clouding Michigan State fans' opinions of these players and what the coaching staff needs to do.
I think the fan base, this is how I feel in terms of that. They have a right to be upset. I mean, you know, given what's going on so far, you know, the record, the perceived talent of this team, they have a right to be upset. And every one of them, those that are upset, have the right to do that. But in terms of, like I said, there's certain guys on this team that I think have gotten an unfair shake from a lot of fans, and Darian Hicks is probably the prime example of that. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, he has, it's similar to Copeland. Both of them kind of started their careers in a similar way where they, you know, have a really good game or two. And then after that, you know, it's tough for him. And keep in mind, Hicks is a senior, but Copeland's still young. You have a lot of these young guys, and it's the same thing we're saying in every other position. A lot of these guys are young, and they're just simply not ready. Now, I think Copeland's expectation was to be ready, and really he should be ready, but he's not, it seems like, at the moment. And you know, he's probably going to keep playing, keep getting that game experience, and he'll probably keep getting better. You just hope that you can see that sort of start to happen at the end of this season as opposed to him just plateauing or continuing to get worse and performances get worse.
Yeah, I mean, that I can't remember which touchdown it was. Copeland had zone coverage on the play, and he was in his zone, but there was nobody else in the vicinity. It was one-on-one. The receiver just ran up and out, and it's like Copeland has to read that guy, and he has to pick up on that guy. There's no one else there. Stick to the one guy who's close to you, at the very least. And it resulted in a BYU touchdown. And, all right, we've only got a couple minutes left. I want to say something. I felt he was part of those record-setting seasons at Michigan State. And so I felt he deserved a pass. I'm off that wagon now. I think Dave Warner needs to go. Running the ball 11 times in a close game against a BYU team that you should be able to throw on. They ranked, 104th in the nation in pass defense. Why are you not throwing the ball? I get you want to establish the run game. Michigan State has the best trio of backs in the Big Ten. If you put those guys behind Michigan's offensive line, it's curtains. But
right.
Dave Warner,
and
something has to change. You have to change the game plan. Changing the quarterback is not the answer here.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one thing to speak to that point is we talked about what some of the teams have done to the BYU defense before the Michigan State game, such as Toledo, a MAC school.
Right.
Like, who's done well, gained 700 yards. Michigan State had 206 total yards of offense. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And if you're the head of the offense as a coach, you're going to be responsible for that number. You're going to be responsible for the way that you're calling plays in the way that the team is performing on the field. You're not 100% responsible, but you're the main guy. It's always going to fall on the coach, and especially when it comes to play calling. I mean, that's one thing it's completely obvious to fans. Even the BYU coaches who, on the way off the field, said they did nothing that we didn't game plan for. I mean, it's just gotten too vanilla, too simple, and he needs to go. I agree.
Yeah, we can keep going to it. 11 passes with O'Connor, 3.5 quarters.
Yeah.
With the way Michigan State's offensive line has performed, with the way they performed the entire BYU game, why are you still running the ball? Why? It boggles my mind. Yeah, I said it. The playmakers back there are incredible, but guess what? That depends on the offensive line. Do I know who doesn't depend on the offensive line? R.J. Shelton, Donnie Corley, Monty Medeiros. These guys can make plays. I think Medeiros had a drop, but, I mean, what's new this season? I mean, play the odds, O'Connor's still completing 61% of his passes. It completely boggles my mind that you're going to sit there and try to force feed these running backs, and then you decide to open up once you throw a backup in to spark it. You want to know what would be a spark? A 70-yard pass to Donnie Corley against Indiana. 97-yard pass to Donnie Corley. You know the pass he dropped?
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time I defended him, but I'm with it now. Things need to change. I understand changing things on the offensive line. I understand starting Gerald Holmes, bringing in a new quarterback, only complicates things for a team that can't find a spark because they don't run plays that can ignite it.
Right. And in terms of the quarterback too, I mean, listen, after the game, Damian Terry said, you know, he was the number two guy all spring, all fall. There wasn't – Dave Warner had said previously there was an open competition for the number two spot. Terry said that wasn't the case. And I know fans are calling for Lewerke, but I think there's a reason why you didn't see Lewerke. I think in practice or some other reason, I don't know what it is, he must not have been doing well. There's a reason why they went to Terry. And I think, you know, it speaks volumes that they went to a guy that has really struggled through the air to fix their passing game. And then that speaks volumes about how it must be, Lewerke must not just be ready yet. And I think you have to trust the coaching staff in that too. And I know a lot of fans are going to be upset by that, but if that's the case, that's the case.
See, and I mean, I'll differ from you there. I'm not on the Terry wagon. You know, like you said, you're throwing in a guy who can't throw to play quarterback. I mean,
right. He
did all right, minus the one throw against BYU, but I mean, was he efficient enough? That interception, would O'Connor have thrown it? Probably not. O'Connor's done a pretty good job holding on to the ball and completing his passes. And that will, I mean, everyone goes, oh, well, O'Connor can't make a read. Well, Terry took off and ran when his first read wasn't open. You're not helping the offense by bringing in a guy who had 3.5 years to beat Tyler O'Connor, hasn't been able to do it. He's had 3.5 years to beat O'Connor, and he could not win that starting. Yeah, it just completely baffles me that you feel like he can be the guy who can lead a team down the field when you can't throw the ball. You have no problems running the – you have some issues running the ball, but you don't have issues with the quarterback plays. O'Connor was not given an opportunity to make those plays, and until he is, I'm still going to go out and say he's the guy. I think Lewerke's the future. Like I told you, best arm I feel since Smoker or Tony Banks. But I think O'Connor's the guy right now. If Antonio wants to win now, he needs to stick with who he started with until O'Connor gives him a reason not to play him, which, frankly, wasn't the case this weekend. That does it for us today for Grant Esmacher. I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the Red Theater Report.